Thanks, guys. Please have a seat, everybody. You already have. Okay, good evening. My name is Matt. If we've not met, lovely to have you here. I'm part of the leadership here at Maybridge. Before I say much else, I've got a little discussion question for you to have with the person next to you, which is thematically related to what I will then be talking about, surprisingly. And it's this. If there was one character trait you wish you could magically give to every leader in the world, what would it be? Now, I'm sure there are particular political leaders that you wish you could change, but don't only apply it to them. Like any leader in the world, if there's one... Okay, shall we reconvene? Anybody care to shout out anything that they came up with? One trait you could magically give to every leader in the world, what would it be? Caring. That's a good one. No one's going to argue. Kind. Integrity. Compassion. Honesty. What did you say? Harder edge. He didn't mean it. Yeah, someone just said integrity, Jason. Just so, yeah. Humility, yeah. I'm sure we could go on all evening. There's loads of good traits that we could think of that we would like leaders to have. If only they all did. Okay, so today we are continuing with our Everyone Everywhere Sunday series. We're going through the biblical book known as Acts. We began a few weeks ago. Quick recap. Acts is sort of the adventures of the early church. It's all about the good news of Jesus being announced to the world. And so far, what we've got up to, Jesus has appeared to his disciples, his little gang of followers, post-death. He's resurrected. They are now all convinced that it's true. It really happened. They've stopped asking questions about it. And after a season, he's gone. And then in today's passage, we get to see something about basically who Jesus put in charge, who he left to launch something that is still changing the world now. And he spent about 3 years with this group of young dudes, basically, and he leaves them with loads of responsibility. And when you look at them on the surface, this is a crazy thing to do if you look at on paper who they are. And the passage we're going to look at is interesting because it's the first time any Christian leaders have to do anything without Jesus being physically around. They're now kind of on their own. So it's quite revealing. And what I want to do is go through it and then draw out six possibly surprising things this tells us about authentic Christian leadership. And as I say that, you might be thinking, well, I'm not sure what that's got to do with me. I'm not a leader. Or you might be thinking, I'm not even sure I'm a Christian. You know, or you might be thinking, I'm not a leader or a Christian. What's this got to do with me? Sorry, Jethro, you are included in this. Don't worry. You'd have to walk up. But I think what this passage reveals about Christian leadership should both encourage the person who thinks they can't be a leader, and the church is full of people like that, and I think it speaks to those who might have a nervousness about the idea even of Christians leading and influencing things, because it shows us what a genuine leader who follows Jesus is supposed to be like. And the blueprint is good. I think you will agree at the end that the world needs leaders and influences in the mold that we see in this passage. So let's read it. Here we are at his Acts chapter 1 from verse 12. It says, "Then the apostles returned to Jerusalem from the hill called the Mount of Olives, a Sabbath day's walk from the city. When they arrived, they went upstairs to the room where they were staying. Those present were Peter, John, James and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James son of Alphaeus and Simon the Zealot, and Judas son of James. They all joined together constantly in prayer, along with the women and Mary the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. In those days, Peter stood up among the believers, a group numbering about 120, and said, 'Brothers and sisters, the scripture had to be fulfilled in which the Holy Spirit spoke long ago through David concerning Judas, who served as guide for those who arrested Jesus. He was one of our number and shared in our ministry. With the payment he received for his wickedness, Judas bought a field. There he fell headlong, his body burst open and all his intestines spilled out. Everyone in Jerusalem heard about this, so they called that field in their language Akeldama, that is, field of blood.' Nobody makes that Bible verse into a fridge magnet, do they? 4, said Peter, 'It is written in the book of Psalms, may his place be deserted, let there be no one to dwell in it, and may another take his place of leadership. Therefore, it's necessary to choose one of the men who have been with us the whole time the Lord Jesus was living among us, beginning from John's baptism to the time when Jesus was taken up from us. For one of these must become a witness with us of his resurrection. So they nominated two men, Joseph called Barsabbas, also known as Justus, and Matthias. Then they prayed, Lord, you know everyone's heart. Show us which of these two you have chosen to take over this apostolic ministry, which Judas left to go where he belongs. Then they cast lots, and the lot fell to Matthias, so he was added to the 11 apostles. So there we go. And I'll tell you six things I think this passage says about authentic Christian leaders. And the first one is this. Authentic Christian leaders do what Jesus says. Who thinks that sounds obvious? Now look at the first line. Okay, it seems a little bit incidental. They went back to Jerusalem and they were returning from the Mount of Olives, which is kind of on the perimeter of the city. And this means they are heading somewhere more central. They're on the edge of Jerusalem, they're heading somewhere more central, which, humanly speaking, was a really dumb thing to do. Why would you do this? They know the authorities hated Jesus. They hate anybody who follows him. They executed him a matter of weeks ago, and they're going back into the danger zone, the middle of Jerusalem. What if someone spots them? What if they get recognized? What if they get arrested? What if they get killed? But they go there anyway. Why? One reason. Jesus told them to. There's no other reason to go. There's every reason not to go. Now, when we look at why Jesus wanted them to go to Jerusalem, we'll look at that next week. But for now, if you look at the 12 guys that Jesus picked to be the core leaders of everything that would follow, which is now down to 11 because one betrayed him, they're very unimpressive people in lots of ways. But I think the foundational reason that Jesus chooses them and not any of the many other people who on paper were more qualified is that these are the guys who'll actually do what he says. It's not, to be a great follower of Jesus or even a leader who follows Jesus, it's not primarily at all about talent or connections or being a certain personality. It's, will you do what he says? It's as simple as that. Without that, the whole rest of it is a non-starter. Seems obvious when you think about it, doesn't it? But I think it's amazing how many Christian leaders, when you look at what they actually do, what they give their time and energy to, it's not necessarily stuff that Jesus said to do. And I don't just mean church leaders, although I include that. I mean people who give leadership in all sorts of different ways, leading worship, leading small groups, leading community work. Loads of Christians, if you really stripped back to what they're doing, how they're trying to express leadership, is that they're just being nice people. And in Western culture, this is a huge thing. If you're nice, nobody will stop you, nobody will object to you, nobody will have a problem with you. You can get comfortably on with being nice. And it's not that being nice is bad. Don't hear me say that. I like nice people. You like nice people. The problem is that being nice as the core defining thing was never something that Jesus said to do. And what Christians tend to do, I've got to say, is dig out whichever Jesus line or Jesus teaching is their favorite, and then do that, and miss the sort of the bigger picture, the whole. We miss pointing ourselves towards what he actually wants for us. Take this tiny thing of telling the disciples to wait in Jerusalem. Lots of well-meaning Christians would tell their friends never to go anywhere challenging or dangerous and call that godly wisdom. But Jesus tells them to be in what for them is possibly the most dangerous place on earth. Now, he knows it's fine. It's going to turn out fine. But they don't. They just have to listen to what he says and trust him and get on with it. And that's Christian leadership above everything else. Firstly, it's being a follower of him. Second thing, authentic Christian leaders can come from any background. And actually, because of the first point, Christian leaders can come from any background whatsoever. Now, we're mostly modern British people at Maybridge, most of us, so we've all been brought up with the idea that everybody is equal and everybody is valuable, regardless of your birth, your family background, whatever. And we tend to like it when somebody, maybe from a less prestigious background as well in life, we think, oh, isn't that great? We might make a movie out of that. Like, we love that. That is not how the ancient world worked or how many cultures today work. It's the historical influence of Christianity on the West that makes us think that way. In the culture of the first century, it was all about which family you were from, what citizenship you had, what connections you had. That was your CV. That was how you demonstrated that you mattered, or that you know you were worth trusting or employing. On top of that, in Jewish culture, a rabbi, a spiritual teacher, would pick students to pass their teaching on to. And basically, they'd try and choose the brightest kids around. The sort of kids who are in the top set for every subject in high school. They'd find them and get hold of them and they'd train them. But the people Jesus picks already have jobs when he recruits them, which means they are, by definition, outside the rabbinical education system. They are not seen by the powers that be as the best caliber people, the smartest people. If you look at the 11, and go, if you went through them, you got a bunch of fishermen, one of which is Peter, who is notoriously hot-headed. You've got Simon the Zealot. That means he's a political activist. He's probably been involved in violence against the Romans. You've got Matthew, who was a tax collector, which means he was employed by the Romans and got rich by following their stuff and exploiting people. So they probably don't naturally get on, Simon and Matthew. Imagine how awkward that was around the campfires, you know, just dealing with their very, very different ways of living before getting together with Jesus. And I've got to say, I've always felt sorry for the other Judas, because nobody names their child after him, do they? Everybody else got to have thousands of people named after them, but not Judas, son of James. And for his whole life, he'd have to introduce himself. Hi, I'm Judas. No, not that one. He gave us all a bad name. And basically, Jesus plucks people from all sorts of backgrounds to be his followers. This was very radical at the time. Nobody else did this. And I love that this is so clear in Jesus' story, because today, while we like to say that everybody is equal, and we like it in theory, in practice, society is still very much weighted to give leadership and opportunity to people with some backgrounds more than others. If you are more middle class, if you're university educated, there is more expectation, often, even in church world, that you perhaps have the ingredients to be a leader. That is not the Jesus way. And I want to say this evening, you might be someone that you feel, you might not have said this, you feel like your background prevents you from being a leader in some way. And you wouldn't express it in those words, but it sort of drags you back. You feel like you're not intelligent enough, or you did something really bad in the past, or you're not successful by the measures of our culture. Doesn't matter. You might not become the CEO of Google, but in God's eyes, it's not what it's about. Different criteria. Look at what he did. Look at what Jesus did with a dozen everyday blokes who are outside the system. Look what he's done through history with unlikely people. If you're willing to follow Jesus and do the rest of the stuff we talk about this evening, you can be a leader of incredible significance who is trusted in the kingdom that God is building. If you're a person of great character and you're just not gifted as a leader, that's fine. That's really, really important too. But if you do have leadership to bring, the last thing that should hold you back is your background, is the stock that you come from. It doesn't matter. Third thing, authentic Christian leaders are never lone rangers or loose cannons. Do you know what those phrases mean? Hopefully some of you do. Now, look at how this group, they all stay connected to each other and they meet regularly together. None of them goes off and does their own thing. When it says they were joined together, this translates one of Luke's favourite Greek words, he keeps using it, homothemidon, which means coming together in consensus. As they prayed together, they came to a deeper unity of mind and heart. And that's what Christians are supposed to do. That's what leaders do. But you know, I've been doing Christian ministry and leadership of different types for 23 years because I started when I was 6. And one of the most bonkers things to me is when people who are Christians, now they are Christians, they love Jesus, they want to follow Jesus, they've got loads of passion, but they're kind of an island on their own. They do their own thing off to the side and they're sort of detached from everybody else. You might have met somebody like this, you might be somebody like this, and it's the sort of person, they've got ideas, but they just kind of do what they want to do. And they've got loads of spiritual language, but they're not really accountable to anybody. They're not involved in church community unless they're in charge. And they don't really commit properly. And the opinions that they've got, because they're not in community, they become sort of unchecked monsters. And they're unattached to the message of the Bible or common sense. And a lot of potential goes to waste. The earliest Christian leaders, in fact, all the earliest Christians, were not detached from the wider body. They didn't go rogue and do something separately. They didn't say, oh, I've got to go and do something else because the churches in my town are rubbish, so it's all about me. I've got to go and do my thing. They didn't do that at all. It must have been challenging for some of these leaders to get on with each other. They must have had to work at it, deal with differences, not get their way, have their opinions challenged, have their character challenged. And that's a really good thing. That's how it's supposed to be. That's how you end up with mature people. So if you're a leader, make sure you're in meaningful community. And whether you're in leadership or not, beware following the enigmatic, charismatic influencer who is siloed from everybody else. That is not the Christian model. Never has been. Fourth thing, authentic Christian leaders understand their own story in light of God's story. There were 12 disciples and Judas betrayed Jesus. He opted out, so it went down to 11. And Peter says, just has this little comment, he was one of our number and shared in our ministry. This must have been really painful. You know, Judas was part of the gang, 3 years together, night and day, and then he betrays Jesus, which effectively means he betrays the whole group. That would hurt, wouldn't it? That would be hard. But Peter thinks about where this leaves them as a group. And the way he understands what's going on is to think about what the Old Testament says about this. He's understanding the story in a new way in light of what's just happened with Jesus. And he lets the Bible tell him the bigger story. And that's why he says this scripture is being fulfilled. And he quotes a few Psalms. And his conclusion is to basically say, what I'm reading in the Psalms is what we're living out now. When it says, may another take his place of leadership, that's our group, that's about us. The Psalms were looking forward to Jesus, and that means we're bang in the middle of the story, so we've got to recruit somebody else. Peter could have sat around being bitter about Judas. He could have just got on with things and just not thought about getting a 12th person. Would things have been so bad if he doesn't do this? But no, Peter's instinct is to operate within the story that God tells. That instinct to understand what's going on in light of God's story is absolutely key to being healthy as a Christian leader. Seeing life and everything that happens to you, ups and downs, and leadership's got a lot of those, through the lens of God's story is not just what keeps you going, but keeps you being useful. It's not just positive thinking, it's not just gritting your teeth and getting on with it. The thing that will keep you not just alive, but having a functional, useful faith in Jesus is seeing what happens to you and those around you through the lens of that bigger story. Take our world right now. It's geopolitical chaos, yet again. Not for the first time. Based on what we read in the news, there is not much reason for hope that things are going to go brilliantly anytime soon. Or in a more everyday sense, you can personally pray for something for ages and it doesn't change. Or you can look after somebody and get no affirmation back from them. Or you can be in despair at a relationship that has gone really bad. But when you look at things, everything, even the smallest bad thing, the littlest good thing, in light of the story that God is unfolding across history, doesn't half help. It doesn't take away sorrow or pain or hard work, but it reframes everything that you're going through, all your experiences. And leaders who grasp this are better able to weather the difficult stuff that always comes. That's what Peter did. He interpreted what was going on in light of God's story. Fifth thing, authentic Christian leaders know they are never, ever the main event. I love how Peter does not over-spiritualize this. He basically just, he says, well, we need somebody who saw everything that Jesus did, right from John's baptism, that was at the beginning, all the way till he left, post-resurrection, that was at the end. It wasn't just the core 11 or 12 guys that saw this. There were loads of people. And Peter's thinking, right, our job is we've got to bear witness to Jesus to the world. We need to announce this. We're going to need somebody who gets it, who's seen the whole thing and can explain it and defend it. And the way that Peter defines what that is with the word witnesses. And this word keeps coming up in the New Testament. And it's a Greek word, martus, from which we get the word martyr. And it can mean a legal eyewitness, a spectator at an event, Or it can have an ethical sense, somebody who forfeits their own comfort for a cause. And in this instance, I think martyrs was chosen cleverly because it covers both meanings. Being a witness of the resurrection meant you were an eyewitness. You saw it, but also you commit to the cause of making it known. By implication, that means that no Christian leader is ever the main event. No Christian leader needs to cultivate a personal following, pursue a high profile, be the center of attention. It's not about us, ever. Ever. I remember one time hearing a quote from a church leader who was known for being a very good communicator. And when talking about his church's approach to things, he would say, "I am the brand." No. It's not about any of us. It's certainly not about branding. We're just people who know who Jesus is and we represent him. He's the main event. And so here and now, I've got to say, most of the leaders I know, especially in this church, this is not the problem. Now, people are not looking for attention, they're just honestly serving, which is wonderful. But if that's you, if you're somebody who, you know, you just get your head down and you serve and you're not looking for attention, but you might think, oh, I'm not as important as somebody on a platform, you know, somebody at a conference, somebody who's doing loads of TikTok content or whatever it is the kids do these days. Remember, that stuff is not the heart of Christian leadership. That's not the main thing. The question is really, will you be an ambassador of Jesus, a witness, whether it's under a spotlight or not? And in the same vein, I think it's helpful to think about this evening too. If you're looking for a leader to follow, you know, you're looking, you know, what do I believe? You know, what, you know, thinking these three things through, and you're bombarded with stuff online. There's so much stuff out there. The world will give you loads of options. Loads of people are thrust into the sphere of your attention. Give priority to those who humbly represent Jesus. It's not bells and whistles and flashing lights. Don't ignore all of that. Who humbly is representing Jesus? But sixth thing, and finally, authentic Christian leaders know they are 100% replaceable. Right at the end of the passage, they're looking for a 12th man. It's 12 because Israel was made up of 12 tribes. It's kind of a symbolic thing. And they line up these two guys who are qualified, and there's no way to pick one or the other. So they draw lots, which seems like a very weird, very unspiritual way to make what looks like a big decision. I mean, if you were to apply for a job at Maybridge and we had another candidate who was equally qualified, we wouldn't draw lots to decide, right? We would have a more sophisticated system in place. And this feels like a very significant decision made in a random way. Somebody missed out on being an apostle and appearing on stained glass windows throughout history because the stick that represented him was shorter than another stick, basically. So close. But it turned out fine. It was absolutely fine. On the one hand, it was important to get somebody qualified. They had a standard, that was very clear. On the other hand, it kind of didn't matter. Both Joseph and Matthias are qualified, so, you know, don't stress about it. You don't need a month of prayer and fasting. Just get on with it and pick somebody. No Christian leader is so special that God can't provide somebody else. Leaders will come and go. Some leaders will be especially gifted at something, some won't. But we never need to put all our eggs in the basket of any leader except Jesus. And that means if you're a leader yourself, like you've got a job title or just, you know, you're a person who just takes leadership in things, the pressure is off. This is a good thing. God loves you deeply, but he doesn't need you personally at all. If you get sick or tired, he's fine. The world will be fine. The plan will come together. If you're one of those people and you've got a tendency to think everything will collapse without me, that's not true. It's not true at all. Do you know, after this passage, you read the rest of the another 27 chapters of Acts, very little is said about the group that we see here. Most of them disappear into the background. If you were to read through the whole book, Luke, the author, is far more interested in the growth of the church than who is responsible for what and in what leadership role. He shows very little concern for explaining the organizational structure and who had what title. Why? Because it doesn't matter. Leaders, structures, no, they're important in their own way, but they come and go like they always have. But God will continue to grow his people. So, those are the six things that I think come out of this passage about the very first Christian leaders. They do what Jesus says. They can come from any background. They're never lone rangers or loose cannons. They understand their story in light of God's story. They know they're never, ever the main event. And they know they're 100% replaceable. Do all Christian leaders do this or live this out all of the time? No, of course not. But this is a picture of the ideal. This is what a world of leaders imitating Jesus should look like. And it's really good. This is what we should expect leaders to be like in a church setting. And in one sense, it's a really high bar. People of really great character and humility and all those things that we shouted out earlier and a commitment to community. But in another sense, notice what is not here. There's nothing about academic credentials or being on a platform or having loads of money or having some sort of success. If you've ever thought to yourself, I can't give leadership in a church setting because you're missing those things. Well, they're not what we're after. We're after this. We need this. This is the sort of leaders the church needs. Are you one of them? Do you fit this definition? Maybe not perfectly. None of us do. But are you somebody that could take on some more leadership, but you've just never had the opportunity? Or you think nobody's noticed you, but you really want to help to grow what God's doing? If that's you, I'd love to have a chat with you later. You might also be convicted by this and think, do you know what? When I've thought about leadership, I've valued the wrong things. And in relation to today's passage, you might think, I'm emphasizing stuff that's not the main stuff when I think of leadership. I'm valuing the wrong people. I'm seeing myself the wrong way. I need a reset on some of this. If that's you, again, love to pray for you. There's people at the back to do that. I'd be up for doing that. But you know, nobody gets leadership right. The more you do it, the more you realize it. Even the first disciples who had 3 years of intense content from Jesus, the greatest leader ever, made a huge number of mistakes. But the one that they followed didn't. He's the true leader. He's the one that we emulate. He's the one that died to cover our inadequacies and our mistakes and frees us up to be imperfectly involved in the kingdom that he's building. Leaders who follow him are actually how the news gets to everyone everywhere, as we're seeing through this series. So before we worship again, I'm going to sit down in a moment. I just want to open the room up and I just want to invite you to pray. Just pray out loud. It doesn't have to be flowery language. Just pray what comes to mind or comes to your heart. But I want you to pray for leaders. Pray for leaders in this church, in other churches locally, around the country, around the world. And just pray that we would see more people raised up as leaders who are like the ones that we see in this passage. And there's that slide if it's helpful for you. So I'm just going to sit down, take a couple of moments, and just as you feel led, just jump in and pray. I'd appreciate that. Thank you.